Oh, it's a Friday with the Drive Guys. One of the Drive Guys. Kyle's in Houston. Get ready for the Kings and the Rockets tomorrow, but the legendary Jerry Reynolds is with us. Interesting. Earlier, someone asked, we get questions for Jerry. Someone asked, who's your favorite player that you ever coached? And you said Eddie Johnson, right?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, real pro's pro, no question.
So Eddie Johnson now, of course, great NBA player and shooter, now broadcaster for the Sun. So we texted him, and Eddie's going to join us this hour as well. So,
oh, wow, great.
Yeah, we'll see if he...
He's an outstanding broadcaster. He would have been a good coach, by the way. He, no question, would have been a good coach.
There was a lot of guys on that team that ended up coaching or would have been good
Mike
coaches.
Mike Woodson, Larry Drew, Reggie Theus, all coached. And I think Eddie might have been the best.
Huh, yeah. So right now, nice enough to join us here. Brought to you by Timber Creek Golf Course. Visit timbercreekgolfcourse.com to book your tee time today. Our Sacktown Sports 49er insider, the one and only Emil Fragoso. Emil, how are you today? Happy Friday. Oh, we're not hearing Emil. We don't have Emil here. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get Emil Fragoso.
No, that's good. Yeah.
I think he's shy about you being here, Jared.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Me and Emil, we go way back, man.
Yeah. Hey, Emil, can you hear us, sir?
I can hear you guys. Yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Thank you, sir. Happy Friday. Was that it? You were kind of nervous being around Jerry again?
You know, Jerry, you're one of my childhood heroes, honestly, so it is an honor to talk to you, sir.
Well, that is very kind of you, and I know that you need to get better heroes.
Hero, wow. A hero. Hey, Emil, I know that the 49ers have the bye week, but did they do enough at the deadline this week and Chase Young to turn this thing around?
I think they did enough to turn it around. I would have liked to personally seen them do a little bit more, though, Whitey. I think if they added a nice starting corner as well as another rotational guard or tackle to shore up that offensive line that's also had some struggles as well. It's not just defense for the Niners. Offensively, they haven't been able to run the ball. And I think that stems from not getting the push up front with their offensive line. Spencer Burford, their second-year player, hasn't been doing as well as last season, and Aaron Banks is now out for a few weeks with that turf toe. So they're going to have some offensive line issues to figure out. And at cornerback in their secondary, that's been a big weakness for them the last couple of years. So that'd been great if they added another, Kenny Moore from the Indianapolis Colts. If they got Jalen Johnson from the Bears, have been great too. But adding Chase Young, I do think helps them and will give them that push to get back on track.
Now, do you think that they were trying to do more and that just either, it takes two to tango or that just the price tag on some of these guys that they would have liked to have acquired was maybe too high?
Yeah, I think it was a little bit of all that, Whitey, honestly, because there was that tweet from Tim Kawakami that did say they were working on an additional deal to get done. I do think that was a thing. We kind of got a little fooled there by Adoree Jackson, the New York Giants there. But I do think they were trying to get Jalen Johnson. Now, the kicker was that Jalen Johnson, 24 years old, leaving his rookie deal, wanting a maximum extension. Now, what does that mean? $17 million or more per year. The Niners can't really afford to give a cornerback that kind of money, already paying Javarius Ward a good amount of money per year. So to get him, it would have taken a lot, and they would have had to give up a second round pick or even higher is what I've kind of gotten the notion of there. So I don't think the Niners are willing to part with that high of draft compensation. I think the Niners' philosophy has always been get the right players but at the right price, and Chase Young just came at the right price for that comp three pick.
You said the kicker, and you reminded me that Robbie Gould now he's kicking with an NFL team, not necessarily signed, but I understand Robbie Gould's working out for an NFL team. Is that true, Emil?
Yeah, about 24 hours ago, there were reports coming out of the New York Giants that Robbie Gould, longtime 49ers kicker, was kicking in a kicking competition. And while he did not win it, they ended up signing someone else. I believe it was either Randy Bullock to their practice squad and one more as well. Robbie Gould wanting to continue the career at age 40, and it's amazing to see. He was so accurate with the Niners, and it's unfortunate that they weren't able to re-sign. They wanted to go in a different direction. I know Robbie wanted to come back, and if Jake Moody stays inconsistent because he's only hit 80% of his kicks this year, maybe they can give him a call later. I don't know, but it's just nice to see Robbie Gould at age 40 still kicking.
Yeah, it seemed to me like he's a guy that was really a clutch guy.
Absolutely.
That somebody in this league could, whenever a game comes down to a field goal with 2 seconds left, you'd kind of like to have a guy that you know is going to make it.
That's kind of surprising that he didn't get the job, that he got beaten out there, Emil.
Maybe he's starting to show some old age at age 40. I don't know. I mean, it's all downhill from here, right?
When is Trent Williams back? Do we have any idea?
We don't know a clear indication from the Niners. They haven't said, but my indication is that he's going to be back at practice this week. He was trying to get in some work off the side the end of last week, and he was seen on the field. I watched him a little bit in pregame before the Bengals. He was moving around pretty well, moving pretty active. So I do think his ankle is shoring up, and the Niners are just kind of playing these injuries. Same with Deebo Samuel, more cautious than trying to rush him back right now. It's the middle of the season. You know, it's week going into week 10 now for them. They have a long journey. They want to play a 22-game season, and that means going deep into January. And that's what this is about for them, is making sure all their guys are healthy for the playoffs, not just the regular season. So they can afford to rest a couple guys. I know they've lost a couple games, but in their minds, it's better to have them healthy later on than right now.
Doesn't it seem weird, though, Emil? I know that you could look at this and say, hey, this is the time of year when the 49ers really go on a run, but they're doing it backwards this year. Typically, they start slowly, and then they gain momentum. This year they started out so quickly, and now they're in a situation where nothing's going right. It's a lot more daunting and a lot more, I think, 49ers fans are a lot more anxious than they typically are, even though the last couple of years the record has not been this good at this time of year.
I think they're more so anxious because it is the flip-flop, but the Niners historically have not been great in October under Kyle Shanahan. Mm-hmm. Even last year, weeks 5 through 7, they lost two of those three games, one of those to Atlanta and then to the Chiefs at home before the bye week. And then right after that, they go on, you know, just a nice little 15-game win streak into the playoffs with Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo under center. I mean, this Niners team is built on resilience, and they're kind of determined to do that again, but it's coming after having their best start since the early in the 90s, honestly. And that's what's so weird about it, is that the Niners were this unbeatable team. We're talking about, are they the best team of the decade? Can they rival the Ravens of the 2000s? And now 3 weeks later, can they just stop a first down? Can they just not let 300 yards?
You tackle somebody? Kind of yeah. Now, Emil, would Jerry Reynolds still be your hero if you knew that he was a Kansas City Chiefs fan?
See, Jerry, that's hard because I grew up an Oakland Raiders fan.
Yeah.
That's kind of hard for me.
Well, no, I understand. Yeah, that. But you got to admit, as a growing up as a Raiders fan, there really is no rivalry anymore.
That is very true. Very, very true.
Hey, Emil, this may be a stretch, but I'm concerned about the 49ers. And I was remembering what Bill Belichick did to basically the same offense. You know, Sean McVay and the Rams in the Super Bowl, was that Super Bowl 53? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Bill Belichick figured it out and shut it down. Are some NFL teams now finally learning that lesson? Are other coordinators learning how to slow down this offense?
I do think with more tape, it's more available to slow down, you know, younger quarterbacks like Brock Purdy. And that's kind of been the thing with the Niners and their offense, is that they're trying to figure that out, and they're trying to, you know, beat them, you know, put the pressure on Brock Purdy. And then on defensively, they're just going short game, you know, short screen passes, getting the ball out quick. Similar to how kind of the Niners play. They're kind of giving them a taste of their own medicine a little bit on the defense. So there is a lot more tape on these players. And I do think the loss of a couple of position coaches has hindered them a little bit this year. But I still think that they're talented and they still have all the same talent. It's just about execution, because they know how good they can be. It's just, can they put it on tape every single week?
What, in your opinion, is a degree of blame that honestly and fairly can be placed on Steve Wilks? It's easy when things aren't going well to blame the new guy. And obviously something's wrong. How much of it do you think is, if not his fault, just the fact that there's adjustments being made both by the players and by him?
You know, I'd say about 50-50 blame on the coach and then the players. I do think Fred Warner said something really interesting after week 8's loss. He said coaches don't win games, players do. And that's true. But at the same time, you have to scheme up your guys into the right positions. And I think Steve has had a hard time marrying the back end, the back seven, with the front four, and just kind of getting the right coverage and the right time to blitz and whatnot. How do you go from week 7 calling the cover zero blitz in the first half to barely blitzing Joe Burrow and the Bengals? It's just, they're trying to figure this defense out on the fly, because it's with new people, with the new coordinator. And Steve Wilks is more of a secondary coach, not even, you know, a linebacker like Robert Saleh or D'Amico Ryans was. So pressure isn't his instinct. So it's just kind of figure out what is best for them. That may come with a change down to the field. We don't know. We'll figure that out afterwards. But I do think Steve Wilks is still a very talented coach.
No, I don't know how you guys feel about that, but I know that the last two coordinators were on the field. Saleh was on the field. D'Amico Ryans was on the field. Steve Wilks would rather be in the booth. So now some people are saying, oh, he's got to be on the field. I don't see how that makes any difference. If that's where he wants to be because he says he wants to focus on what he's doing, I don't care that the last two guys were on the field. To me, there are many issues with the 49ers. That, to me, is a non-issue.
I think it could actually help them, Whitey. I'm going to disagree a little bit because I do think – I don't know if you watched Pittsburgh-Tennessee last night on Thursday Night Football. If you didn't, don't worry. You didn't miss much.
Everybody watched that, yeah.
Yeah. But they brought Matt Canada, the Pittsburgh Steelers offensive coordinator, down from the booth as well. They brought him from the booth to the sideline. And they won the coin toss and did not defer. They wanted to go on offense first. What they do, go down and score a touchdown on the first possession. Matt Canada was fired up, pumping up his guys. So maybe having the coach on the sideline gives you an extra bit of boost. I know D'Amico Ryans, Steve Wilks, we asked him when he took over and said he was going to do the booth. We asked him why, and he goes, because I get a little too into it on the sideline. So I think he does have that fire, that get the guys riled up that other coaches have done in the past. I just think that he's tried to contain himself and hold himself back a bit, which I don't really get. Like, if you're going to be Steve Wilks, the great defensive coach, be Steve Wilks, and that comes with the fire and energy, then let's do it.
All right. I don't know. That's kind of Harry high school stuff to me, but whatever works. Maybe you're right. Do 49er fans, Emil, have to root for Dallas this week?
No, they have to root for Baltimore because Baltimore's playing Seattle.
Okay. That's an easy one. But with the Eagles and Cowboys, what are 49er fans? Who do you root for in that one?
An Eagles, it's tough. It's no one. You root for a tie, frankly. I say you root for a tie. You're not rooting for a win for anyone. The game I think that they should be more focused on, there's a lot of really good games this week.
Yeah, there are.
Is Ravens-Seahawks, because the Seattle Seahawks are a half game up on the Niners because of the bye week already. If they lose, they are still tied with them for first. If they win, they're a game up on them. That's going to be big, especially coming up here weeks 11 or 12 and 14 or two Seattle games.
Yes.
Both those games are back. They're back and forth, you know, with the Eagles. Nate called it the dirty bird sandwich is what Nate called it. It was pretty funny. So I think that's going to be the real kicker there, is that if the Ravens can hold off Seattle, then you're still even. You feel in a better spot going into those weeks later on.
All right. So, yeah, you don't root for either the Eagles or the Cowboys, do you, really?
Why would you? They're gross.
Well, I mean, because you're trying to figure out how you benefit the most, but I get it. With all the talk about Nick Bosa, he's got all the money, but he doesn't have a lot of sacks. John Lynch says, no, if you know football, you look at the film, he's playing great. How well does Emil Fragoso say Nick Bosa is actually playing this year?
That's all GM coach talk. Nick Bosa needs to get home. That's the reality, is that Nick Bosa can get all the pressures he wants. He needs to get home. And I do think he's playing well because of, you know, obviously analytics and all that stuff. But Nick Bosa was paid record-setting money to get home and be TJ Watt, be Myles Garrett, be all those guys. And he hasn't been, frankly, this year, you know, only three sacks on the year. That's not good enough for a guy who's reigned defensive player of the year. And that's the reality. And Nick knows it too.
Wow. Emil blasting Bosa. How about that?
Well, I mean, you got to call it like you see it.
Yeah.
Hey, what about Deebo Samuel? What's the latest on him?
Yeah, Deebo, you know, we saw him sprinting on the side of the field before the team's bye going into week eight. He looks to be pretty good. There was no, like, harness or, you know, shoulder pad, nothing on him to, like, you know, help support that shoulder. It is a hairline fracture, so it's a small microscopic fracture. You don't want to make it worse, obviously. But I do think Deebo is going to come back, and he went on Kay Adams' show Up in Adams recently. I think it was Thursday, and said, you know, I'm ready to go. So if Deebo says he's ready to go, then he's ready to go. Now, the Niners may see how he is in practice first, because they got to be optimistic or got to be cautious going into later in the season. But if he says he's good to go, I trust Deebo.
Before we get to your card of the day, Emil, I could be totally wrong. I feel like the 49ers are going to turn it around. I don't know if they're going to win the rest of their games, but I feel like whatever's going on, when they get Trent Williams back, you get Deebo back, I think they're going to play well the rest of the week. I really do. That's what I feel in my heart.
Yeah, I honestly do too. I mean, you look at the games they have coming up right after the bye. They're at Jacksonville. Yes, Jacksonville's a good team, but I do think the Niners can win this game. Mm-hmm. Then they are home against the Buccaneers. And last year they dismantled the Buccaneers, and that was with Tom Brady. Now this is with Baker Mayfield. Getting those two wins, I think, is paramount to their success for the rest of the season, because it sets them up to go on a nice winning streak, to stack wins, because this team is all about going 1-0 each week.
Right.
And they're going to keep doing that, but they got to start beating by Jacksonville and then beating the Buccaneers, which are two games they should win.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they gotta run the ball and stop the run. All right, that's Emil Fragoso. And now you have a card for us today, Emil?
I do. Yes. Yes, I do. This came in the mail this morning, actually. And I told you a little bit, Whitey, about how I collect downtowns. And mm-hmm. this is the Damian Lillard from 2016-17 downtown. 9.5 grade on that one as well.
9.5 grade. So is that a rookie card for Damian Lillard?
No, this is from 2016-17. This is his, I believe, one or two of three copies that are in Portland. But it's the first one of the series. So the first edition of this, you know, set.
Yeah.
So I do think it's a wonderful card. Has a little rose in the back too. Very descriptive.
Jerry, yesterday Emil brought his cards in to show us. And literally, he had them in a locked briefcase.
He did.
They're rather valuable.
Well, yeah, you better.
Yeah. Any idea how much that one is worth, Emil?
That, let me see here. I'd say about 500.
Oh.
You better keep them locked up.
Especially around here.
Yeah,
I do. Well, it's all because I'm a part of a new sports card show, Jerry and Whitey. That's why.
Yeah, that's on. Are you guys on tomorrow?
We are. Yeah, the True Sports Card Show every Saturday, 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. right here on Sacktown Sports. Me and True Sports Card owner Emran Pilati, we talk all things sports cards. We're gonna talk a lot of different things, and we're lining up some pretty cool guests coming up in the next couple of months. So stay tuned for that.
Emil, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, guys. Have a great one.
Emil is brought to you by Timber Creek Golf Course. Visit timbercreekgolfcourse.com to book your tee time today. Coming up, Jerry Reynolds says his favorite player he ever coached in the NBA, Eddie Johnson, joining us, coming up here. It's Drive Guys on Sacktown Sports. Yeah, and Sacktown Sports has been the home of the Kings for a long, long time. And Jerry Reynolds, of course, nice enough to join us today. And, you know, sometimes, Jerry, it's hard to list all the things you've done. And that's why I've just taken to calling you lately all-time Kings icon, because that really does sum it up. And it's absolutely true. You're an icon in this town.
Yeah, what does that pay?
I don't know. It's just you probably don't have to ever buy many drinks in town, right, or buy many beverages when you're out and about.
Well, I'm not out and about, so I wouldn't really know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. All guests, by the way, come to you from the Folsom Lake Honda Hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. And we've been playing a little bit of text tag today with the great Eddie Johnson. Earlier, somebody, you know, we like to field your questions for Jerry, and somebody asked Jerry who's his favorite player they'd ever coached in the NBA. And I've heard you answer that before, so I wasn't surprised when you went to Eddie Johnson. I'd actually texted him last night. And, Eddie, I think the Sixers, they played last night, and I think they play, like, tomorrow morning our time. So, you know, he's been traveling, and I know he has his own show. But he did say he's going to probably get to us in the 4 o'clock hour, so we're hoping to talk to your good friend, Eddie Johnson, sharpshooter Eddie Johnson.
He sure was.
Tough guy.
Tough guy, competitor, you know, one of those guys, he got better in the clutch.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some guys would shrink up a little bit, and Eddie, you know, he would gladly take the big shot.
Mm-hmm. And that's what Wembanyama did last night. He better in the clutch.
He sure did. Boy, scary how good he looked down the stretch of that game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he, you know, I watched him a lot, you know, really early games and stuff. And that's one of those people say, well, you can tell he's going to be great, but it may take a while. Well, I took 5 games, I guess, because
mm-hmm.
he was great last night.
Yeah. Well, as a coach, what did you think of the fact that Pop, if I'm not mistaken, he had used all his timeouts because he's got a young team and they were in the process of blowing a huge lead. So he used up all his timeouts to try to settle him down. I think he had to play the last 6 minutes without a timeout. Now, they won the game, but as a coach, what did you think of that?
I think, you know, that's it. What timeouts are for. If you think you need them, take them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't worry about what the media thinks or we'll get one in 2 minutes or something. Well, the game may be over time. You get a mandatory one. So, I totally agree with that. I mean, I've taken timeouts just to rest guys because I didn't have anybody else to put in. I used to have to deal with Rodney McRae. I said, you got to play 40 minutes, so we'll take timeouts, rest you. But I ain't taking you out.
Who were some of the other guys that you coached that you look back on and say, man, that guy's a really, really good player to coach?
Well, I thought, you know, Danny Ainge was. Kenny Smith was terrific. LaSalle was the best, like Eddie,
mm-hmm.
you know, so many of those guys, early teams had the great chemistry.
Because they were selfless or what? Or
well, yeah, and combination and real. Well, like I said, probably the only guy who's had a little selfishness was Reggie, but Reggie was very popular talented. With his teammates. He mm-hmm. was talented, and you know, the guys just said, "Well, that's Reggie." Mm-hmm. You know, he's Reggie, and he'll get us 22-24, and that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so it didn't really affect the chemistry, but the rest of the guys, you know, just really together. I mean, mm-hmm. the kind of team that they were best friends, you know, like Eddie and Mike Woodson have been best friends for 100 years.
Really?
Yeah.
And I know when the Kings came here, this is a long time ago, we're talking 85, 86, right? With their right. first year here in Sacramento. And they made the playoffs that year, and then Joe Axelson made trade that kind of busted that team up. But I know a lot of people feel that that was a team that was on the verge of being a perennial playoff team. It didn't work out that way in Sacramento because one of the first droughts started in the second year. But it was a very good team that came here initially, right?
It was, you know, and I couldn't agree more. I believe if that team had just been left alone, you know, it would have been a mid-40s win team, probably for, you know, certainly a playoff team, 5-6 year run. But because the chemistry was there, there was mm-hmm. enough talent. You had some young talent like Otis Thorpe and certainly LaSalle was a very young player then. So you had – and then the veteran guy. So the nice mix. So it would have – no doubt in my mind at least mm-hmm. that it would have been a playoff team for many years.
Well, hopefully we'll catch up with EJ here. He's got a number of things going on. Eddie Johnson should be joining us this hour here on Sacktown Sports. Jerry, the Kings this year getting ready to play, of course, Houston tomorrow night. Are they getting better where it matters the most? It looks like they're making strides defensively. All the talk, I know all the talk I did all offseason was they got to get better defensively, got to get better defensively. It's only, what, 4 games in here, but it looks like they're maybe making some strides in that regard?
I think so. You know, I think when you look at the team this year compared to last year, well, I think De'Aaron Fox is a better defender. You know, Keegan Murray's a better defender than he was. Honestly, I think Sabonis is – he's not a great rim protector, but not many centers can step out and switch on the wings and play mm-hmm. him. So, yeah, I think, you know, they've kind of bought in. I'm not saying they didn't buy in before, but I think the continuity of talent and togetherness kind of leads itself to better defense. And, you know, the good news is the Kings are playing better defense. The bad news is they're not as good offensively mm-hmm. as I think they will be. So I think that the offense, I think, will take care of itself. I think that you've hit on it. To get better defense was the main thing to get improved.
They're not shooting well, but I think they're getting pretty good shots for the most part, right? Which shows the offense is functioning.
Yeah, I think so. And I think – you know, here again, it's a team that depends on making threes, and so they haven't shot them nearly as well as they have in the past, or we expect them to. And teams go through that. You know, where I always say, 50% shooters don't hit 5 out of 10 every night. Sometimes it's 3 out of 10, and then 7 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
And so I expect Keegan and I think Herter will get settled in at some point and start making shots.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I don't want to be overly critical. Kevin Herter, you can't question his effort because he's clearly making an effort to do everything else when he's not shooting the ball well. But for this team to be as good as they hope to be, he's got to start making shots, right? There's no way around that.
Yeah, no.
And everyone knows it, and he knows it.
And he knows it. And, you know, his history indicates he will because he did before he came to Sacramento. Mm-hmm. He was a good three-point shooter and a clutch shooter for the Hawks. So I think he will. But just watching him, it really does seem like it's bothered him because I see some kind of jerk shots.
Yes.
Yes, not really the follow-through.
Does it seem like it sometimes it gets a little too flat?
A little flat. And I would say that, you know, when a flat shot, the way you've got less chance to make it, you know, the 45-degree angle mm-hmm. kind of thing, obviously you got a bigger target.
Yeah.
And and I thought last year he had a nice arch on his shot, and it looks like to me he's flattened it out.
Yeah, in golf people say never up, never in, which means if you don't get it to the hole, it ain't going in. And I say that in basketball, never up, never in. You got to get it up in the air or it has no chance.
And right, yeah, it's a tougher percentage. Yeah, I mean, some guys that – have a little flatter trajectory, but in general, I mean, the great shooters, you know, when you watch Curry, I mean, you can't get any better than that. And
yeah,
a nice, you know, nice arc to it. So when it's on, it's just tickling mm-hmm. the twine. That's mm-hmm. it.
Do we need Domas to take a few more? Teams are giving him that shot.
I think so. You know, I mean, he shot, you know, 37% last right. year of the three, and I think it's about the same.
And he's shooting fewer. It's very marginal, but he's technically shooting fewer so far this year than he did last year.
Yeah, he should take two a game at least. I mean, you know, regardless whether he makes them or miss them, just I think it just forces teams to play him a little bit, especially if he makes one. And, of course, I'd like to see him when guys are playing off of him, when they're playing like the, you know, the pick and roll or basically dribble handoff, go at the guy a little more. We saw it a little bit the last couple of games, especially going at Looney a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way to go. I mean, he's been more productive.
Are the Kings getting better defensively where it matters most? Are they doing a better job of protecting the paint? Are they doing a better job of keeping opposing guards from penetrating the perimeter and getting into the paint in the first place?
I think so. I mean, you know, I
that's
seen
the
all
key with this team.
That's
right?
The key with this team, because that's been the real weakness, is where you had so many straight dribble drives right mm-hmm. to the rim, and not many guys can handle that as a center. I mean, so I think the Kings, you know, from their Keegan's had a lot to do with that. I think he's got so much better defensively. And Harrison was always pretty solid. And then Fox, I think that's been a real key because, you know, he's staying in front of guys, just mm-hmm. about like Davion.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. So there's hope. Despite that bone-crushing loss, the Kings doing a lot of good things defensively. And there's an opportunity here these next three games. They take care of business, turn the season all the way around here in the next few days. When we come back, Wemby is real. Is there a chance the Spurs are already real? That's next year. Jerry Reynolds in today. Yeah, Kyle Draper in Houston today. So the great all-time Kings icon, Jerry Reynolds, helping us out. And earlier, somebody asked Jerry to name his favorite players that he ever coached, and I knew it'd be the first name out of his mouth. He mentioned the great Eddie Johnson. Played many years in the NBA, was an original Sacramento King, currently an outstanding Suns broadcaster. And joining us now, Jerry, is your favorite player you ever coached, Eddie Johnson. Say hello to EJ.
Well, EJ, the man, the legend, the myth.
Oh, you. I mean, I thought you retired.
Well, I did, and I should have stayed that way. This is a temporary thing, you know.
Yeah, he's just helping us out, EJ, and thank you. I know you guys are so busy. You're on the road.
Hey,
yeah.
Honestly, he retired, and Jody said, look, no, you got to go.
Well, that was a – yeah, there was a – certainly I think a lot of people would say, wow, you stayed way too long.
Eddie, we were just talking about a number of things that, you know, happened when Jerry was coaching you guys. He was telling us about a time you guys ran a play for LaSalle Thompson because LaSalle wanted a play run for him. And then he says Tank screwed the play up twice, and then he just didn't run it. Were you there for that? Do you remember that play?
I probably was. I mean, that's why we got our head knocked in a lot of nights. I mean, you know. But well, Tank didn't get a lot of plays run for him because he was such a tremendous offensive rebound. He could go get my misses and Reggie's misses and Larry Drew's misses.
Well, there's a lot of misses there.
A lot of misses. But so we put it up a lot. But that's what he did. He and Joe Klein, I mean, they rarely got the ball thrown to him. Like, we would throw it to Tank, and Tank would catch it. There was no problem with Tank. Tank had good hands.
I always said, but too, I mean, Klein, Tank could set some screens, too, couldn't he? I mean, he was
– Oh, yeah.
He was –
Yeah, he was my bodyguard because I talked a lot of junk.
No, the story was – I don't know if you remember, but – if Tank had just, you know, and Tank's such a good guy and was saying, you know, you guys never run anything for me. So we spent a little time in a shoot around or something, had a play put in called Texas. And so we're going to run that the first time we had the ball. And we did, and Tank forgot it. And then we ran it again. And anyway, the first time out, I'll never forget this, he came up and said, I don't run anything for me anymore. I don't want any plays.
That sounds like him.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't used to it. He wasn't used to it. That's probably what it was. You know, and you know, Jerry, I mean, even when we were in Kansas City, these guys, I mean, we rarely ran a ton of plays for the centers because it was always action off of them setting screens, and that's how they would get the ball. And it was very frustrating for them, and I knew it. But I remember one time Joe Klein was crying for the ball, and he wanted it. And I threw it to him a couple of times, and, you know, Joe didn't have the greatest of hands.
So the ball
kind of bounced off his hands, right? So I told him, I said, look, don't throw the ball to his hand. I said, the best target is his head. So he had one of the biggest heads in the history of the game.
He did.
I said, throw it at his head, and he'll catch the ball there. And I learned to just fire it at his head, and literally he would catch everything. So that was always like my information and my hint in regards to throwing the ball to Joe Klein.
I hope
he's not listening.
Well, I hope so too. But I can tell you a story when Joe was traded to Boston, and Bird called me one time and said, "Where can I throw Klein the ball that he could catch it?" And I said, "Just throw it right at his chest. He won't catch it, but he'll knock it down."
Back catcher.
Yeah. Eddie Johnson with us. Eddie, what do you think of where the Kings are now, given, you know, you were here the first couple years, and then you guys had, Jerry was telling us that was a really special team that got broken up there, and the Kings after the long drought, you know, now things headed in the right direction, it appears. You have a unique perspective on their history. What do you think of where the Kings are and how they got there?
Well, I think they're at a great place right now. I love the idea of playing in Sacramento. I was very disappointed that, you know, obviously I got traded, and Jerry had nothing to do with it, so you can't blame him.
No, I didn't.
It was our wonderful, insightful, tremendously gifted, nice Joe Axelson, who obviously didn't like me for some reason. I have no idea. Even to this day, and Joe's not here. But I kind of, when I pray sometimes, I'm like, Joe, why you didn't like me? I mean, I didn't do anything wrong. I mean, I showed up and played every night. Yeah, I was probably limited in certain areas, but I showed up. I didn't miss games. I played hard. And he didn't like me. And it's funny. I tell young players this all the time. I'm like, you know, your challenge is to stay in the league as long as you can. And you're going to run into people that's going to view you differently. And I think at that point in time, we had a lot of gifted players on our team when we came to Sacramento. It was myself, LaSalle, as Jerry and I are talking about, Reggie Theus, Larry Drew, Mike Woodson. We had some high-character guys that didn't follow us to Sacramento. We had a Joe C. Merriweather who passed away a number of years ago, was a tremendous leader on our team. But we had a great group of guys. But, yes, we did struggle on the court, but we were young. And I thought we had a chance. Now, first year in Sacramento, you know, we started out slow, and then eventually we played well enough to make the playoffs, and Houston beat us in the first round, but they went on to the finals. So it was like, okay, we understood why they beat us. And I just saw growth there. And then, you know, along the way, I think, you know, Joe Axelson kind of beat the team up a little bit, and he made a deal for Derek Smith. And I think, you know, and Derek Smith is not here anymore. Mm-hmm. And Derek was really a good dude. He just had an edge to him that didn't fit. And, you know, we went downhill after that for a while. And
yeah.
It was good to see the change and with Divock and Bibby and all of them and how they turned it around and Peja. And now back to the point where the Kings are, I'm extremely excited for it. Even though I work for the Phoenix Suns, I am always got a keen eye on the Kings. I support them continuously.
Eddie Johnson with us, one of the original Kings, and of course his coach here with the Kings, Jerry Reynolds on Sacktown Sports.
Well, Eddie, just one final thing. I was telling Whitey, I said one thing about Eddie Johnson. A lot of guys don't want to take the last shot, and they shrink up a little bit. And Eddie, you couldn't give him enough big shots.
No, I wasn't running from it. That was food. I was not running from it at all. I figured, you know, Jerry, look, I had to do something, right? I mean, you know, I never got any pat on the back for defense. I mean, you did, but no matter how well I played D, no matter, I could go 8-9 games and just concentrate on D and try to do it. I would never get credit for that. And that's the label of the league. Oh, it's no matter once a label is put on you, it's hard to shake it. But the one thing I knew I had a great label for is I can shoot that damn ball and score.
Well, you
and so that was always in forefront
that
of my
was,
mind.
That was automatic. Yeah, you know, I remember telling Joe Axton when they were talking about trading you. And, you know, he's Eddie, don't do that. I said, I've been just in league a little while, but I know he gets 20 points when he plays, and the guy he plays gets 15. And I said, if everybody does that, we'll be 82-0.
Exactly. Exactly. But I was a cotton guy, and you know that. I mean, I was a cotton guy, and Joe didn't like that. And it's unfortunate. That's why it's great to always have great leadership within an organization. And I believe the Kings do right now, and they obviously had it when you were there as well. And I just love what Mike Brown is doing. I love the way that they play. And De'Aaron Fox is, man, I'm telling you, he is unreal. And I just love how they play basketball. The unselfishness of Harrison Barnes, who could really cry and say, I want the ball more, as noted by him having the huge game in opening night. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of great things about that team that I love, and we've had some battles with them here over the last few years.
That's very gracious of you to say. Jerry says that De'Aaron Fox is on track where he could become the best player in Sacramento Kings history. What do you think of that?
Well, he is. I mean, he's on track. Now, can he sustain it, right? That's always the key, is can you sustain it? Because if you sustain it, that means you got to be there a lot of years, and also you got to make sure that you stay healthy and stay on the court. And then when you do have an injury, make sure that you are in great enough shape that your recovery is going to be a lot faster. And I just admired what he did the other night. He knew that he was going to be out a bit. He knew. And so in knowing that, he got back on the court. And he put the Kings in a great situation to win that game. Because, you know, if it wasn't for him in regulation to get them to overtime against the Lakers, then they probably, you know, don't have that chance. And so, I think he's going to be tremendous, man. He's definitely the best clutch player in the game right now in the fourth quarter. I haven't seen anybody better than him. And so, I expect him to continue to grow.
Well, Eddie, what did you think of Victor Wembanyama the other night? I watched that in your broadcast. I mean, wow.
Yeah. You know, it's always a game. Like, for me, I remember my second year in the league. I think I had, like, 35 points and, like, 15 rebounds against the Milwaukee Bucks. And when I had that game, now, note I just said my second year. But until then, I just had no clue. And I was 23 years old. And after that game, I said, okay, I got this. And I went on to average almost 20 points a game in my second year. And the game became more clear for me. It became more easier for me. My angles became more precise. And it was like every night I went out there, I could pretty much write down what I felt I could get against that potential team because I figured it out. This kid figured it out against us this past weekend, and that's his fifth damn game. Like, that's what blew me away. It's like at 19 years old, because I was being critical that he shies away from the paint. He likes to float on the perimeter and all those things. And in last night, like, the first game that we gave him a gift. I mean, we should have beaten him the game before that at home, but we gave him a gift. It showed me something because everything now was in the paint. Like, he started playing in the paint and using his size, and they were throwing lobs to him. And Kevin Durant is almost 7 foot tall. Just to give you an idea. Kevin Durant looked like he was 6'4 guarding him.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
That's how tall he is. That's how tall this guy is. And he's agile. Did you see him dribble the ball up fast at the end of the third, I think, and pulled up for a three and made it? Like, with, like a guard. The league is in trouble. Like, now we know why Greg Popovich is probably going to coach till he's 100 years old. The league is in trouble.
Do you think, he's ahead of schedule, you could say. Do you think, Eddie, that maybe the Spurs are a little ahead of schedule? I mean, the West is so compacted this year. I mean, could they be a team that's going to be a legitimately in the hunt for at least a lower playoff spot this year?
Without a doubt. They showed me that. They've shown me that all year. They got two forwards that can flat out score. Keldon Johnson and Vassell can score. Okay? And Zach Collins finally reached his potential in what everybody thought he was when he came out. So, oh, yes. That what I tried to tell people yesterday, that was no fluke. Jerry, you know this.
Yeah.
The one thing about San Antonio, I don't care how you look at it. I don't care if they don't have talent, no talent. They're going to play hard, and they're going to run their offense pristine. And if you don't match it, they'll beat you. And that's exactly what happened. Suns are beat up right now, a little beat up. Obviously, we got a lot of new players, so he got a little bumps and bruises. Then, you know, Devin was out for 3-4 games. He came back last night. It's just a lot of unevenness going on with them. And that young team in the Spurs, they took advantage of it, and they shot lights out, man. Oh, yeah. They're not going anywhere this year. They're going to compete all year. And people like giving the Suns a hard time losing to them, just watch. They'll beat the Lakers this year. They'll beat Golden State this year. They'll even beat Denver this year in the game. I just believe that they're going to compete all year. And, yes, bottom rung, 8th, 9th, 10th spot, yeah, without a doubt, I think they'll be in a play-in.
Wow. Hey, Eddie, looking at your numbers, which are so impressive, one of the things that jumps out there is the fact that I know you've talked about this on your show. Your years here in Sacramento, you know, you had been a starter and very productive, and then you're coming off the bench. And Jerry's talked about this. I've talked to Jerry about this. You were a guy that understood why that was best for the team, which is not something that is common, certainly not these days. Tell us about what that was like for you, even though you were a very productive player, to look at the situation and say, all right, I think we're all better off here if I come off the bench, because not everybody has that presence of mind or that intelligence.
Look, it wasn't easy for Phil Johnson to come to me and say, Eddie, we're going to bring you off the bench. When I'm leading the team in scoring, I'm second in rebounding, I'm shooting around 50% from the field as a jump shooter, okay? And he came to me and he said that initially I wanted to kill him. I did. I wanted to kill him. And I just said, you know what, Eddie, I'm not going to fight this. And it was in the last year of my contract too, so I knew a little bit of that too. And I just said to myself, I'm going to prove to them in reverse. I'm going to still lead the team in scoring. I'm going to still rebound the ball. It's like I'm going to still do it. And I knew I was going to get the same amount of minutes, so it was no issue with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned into something that actually allowed me to play 18 years professionally. So, yeah, I was mad at Phil Johnson initially. But over the years, I just like, you know what? It turned out to be great. And I used it to, even though as another proven point that, you know, that justified why I should be playing and why I should have the ball and all of those things. So, and we made the playoffs that year. So Terry Tyler came into the lineup and gave us a different look early in game. And, you know, we turned the season around, and we made the playoffs that year. And although Houston beat us, but we still, you know, to me, it seemed like it was a successful change in my game, and I just lived with it.
Hey, you touched on the Suns, some of their issues right now. Is Bradley Beal's back, is that becoming cause for concern at all? Do they know when he's going to be ready to start playing?
Yeah, well, I'll say this, and I've said this for the last few years, and I'm sure I know Jerry probably have great thoughts on this as well. As I said this the last few years, the biggest mistake that players made was getting sneaky rest because they could get it. And what I mean by that is training camp. Training camps used to be 28 days. And we used to go 2-a-day every freaking day. Now, I'm not saying do that, but what I am saying, it shouldn't be 5 days. Like, training camp is 5 days, and they're playing exhibition games. And the stars and the guys that are going to play during the year aren't playing in the exhibition game. So now when the season starts, they're not in great shape. And, by the way, and Jerry knows this, after the fourth or fifth day of training camp, your body, like, reacts negatively towards you. You are sore. And you have to battle through that. Now, look at it the way these guys hit it. They don't even practice but one a day. They don't go terribly hard. And so the soreness for them starts to happen during the season, early part. And to me, it's happened to a lot of players early on right now in this season. Lower extremity injuries happen. So all these things are going on because I believe that they don't prepare for the 82-game marathon like they should. And they're trying to start the marathon, and they're not prepared to play. And so it goes back to Bradley Beal with his back. Yeah, he's had back spasms. And he should be ready. I think I heard that he'll play Wednesday against Chicago. And now the Suns, they're just holding him out. He's getting better by the day. They let Devin get to 100%. He could have played earlier and not missed the games that he missed. And you saw how he played last night. He's just ridiculous. And so I think they'll be whole here in about a week. And I think, you know, you'll see a better team. And the role players will be good for them because, you know, I think we have a very good nucleus of role players.
Well, Eddie, thank you for being so gracious with your time. We appreciate it. I know you guys are so busy, been traveling. Thanks for coming on with Jerry. Jerry, anything else for us?
Eddie, all-timer in my book, and obviously played on an awfully fun team to be around. And I know you and Mike Woodson and are still very close. And, you know, that's the kind of team that I think they've got now, Eddie, one very similar to the chemistry and the good guys that that was on that team.
Yeah, well, look, anytime I'm invited to come on this show, I will be, because I love this dude that I'm talking to, okay? And I'm not just saying that. He knows it. He is one of my favorite coaches and people I've ever been around in this game. And I just hated, that's one of the reasons I hated leaving Sacramento when I did, is because of this guy here. So, Jerry, look, it's good that you got out the house and you're doing a little something, because you can't just totally retire. You got too much energy. Yeah. Okay, so stay with it.
Well, that's exactly what Mrs. Reynolds told me. Get out of the house some.
Thank you, Eddie. We appreciate it very, very much. We hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Eddie.
Okay, good. I love you, Jerry. Okay, take care.
Take care.
Oh, there you go. Jerry Reynolds' favorite player, Eddie Johnson. Yeah.
Good guy.
Yeah.
Good guy.
Absolutely. We're going to take time out. When we come back, another former king, Ryan Hollins. You may remember Ryan from a few years ago. He actually is a TV analyst now for the Rockets. So Ryan's going to join us, help us get ready for the Kings and the Rockets when we come back here with the Drive Guys. Whitey Gleason, Kyle's in Houston. We got Jerry Reynolds in today on Sacktown Sports.